No doubt, if you have a child in your life who attends school, you know all about EdTech, even if you don't know this phrase. It's a combination of education and technology, stuff like classroom tablets, interactive whiteboards, and lots of digital organization platforms and enrichment games. These tools have become even more popular during the pandemic. Many teachers use them, and more schools are now relying on them. But there are some long-standing concerns about EdTech. For instance, many children still don't have laptops and other tech tools at home. And what about student privacy? Natasha Mascarenhas joins us with some answers. She's a senior reporter at TechCrunch. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Tanya. I'm excited to talk about my favorite topic, EdTech.
Oh, well, that's good. This is your favorite topic. Let's talk about this explosion of growth in this industry. I mean, EdWeek reports that the average school district in the U.S. with more than 1,000 students accessed nearly 1,500 EdTech tools last year. That's an increase of 52% compared to the year before. I mean, that sounds like an astounding increase in use. What are some of the ways these EdTech tools are filling the gaps, especially during this pandemic?
Right now, I would say a lot of the energy of EdTech tools can be separated into two camps. There are the tools that want to make teachers' lives easier. So think making it easier to track attendance or even energy and the way that students are interacting in the classroom. There's also the EdTech, and this is the one that I find really exciting, that wants to make students' lives richer outside of school. Think tutoring, after school activities, even stuff that's just meant to make you a more motivated person in general. I would say those are the two big camps.
Well, before we get into the details of those two options, and you have some examples, let's talk first about some of the concerns with EdTech. In New Mexico, for instance, a federal judge recently dismissed a lawsuit claiming Google gathered data on children. How much of a concern is this as more and more schools actually implement these tools?
Look, I think there is a higher bar than ever for getting inside a school door due to issues in the past or just the fact that there are so many other options out there. In order to differentiate as a tool, you need to have some kind of stance or promise on privacy. Will things still slip through? Totally. But I think trust is on top of every entrepreneur's mind right now. It's something that I push entrepreneurs whenever I interview them, because unlike some other startups or Silicon Valley in general, we're talking about kids here. So I definitely agree with that being a huge concern and just the elephant in the room for EdTech.
I'm really interested in this. How do schools actually vet what tools to implement? There are hundreds, if not thousands of them, and I'm sure they're being pitched by all of these EdTech companies who want to be able to get into a school district.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of EdTech's way that they're convincing schools to trust them is that they're not trying to disrupt everything like maybe the old EdTech used to be like, but they're trying to supplement and work more on like the emotion of education than really like the pedagogy and efficacy of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that evolution is interesting. Let's talk about some apps that have gained traction more recently. Here's one called Paper, and here's how the company describes it. Let's listen.
When your grading essays is going to take the entire weekend, luckily, there's Paper. Paper is a 24/7 academic support system where your students can get one-on-one tutoring and essay review from trained professionals.
So, Natasha, this speaks to what you're talking about. This kind of service sounds like a much-needed assistance tool. Give us a sense of how popular something like this is with educators.
I think this is something that can help teachers probably expand and be a more personalized person to their students that either are remote now or also in person and just have a lot of students to manage. I know Paper, for example, you know, recently got a ton of investing, $100 million, which is a lot of money, but it shows how they are not just convincing, you know, each other on a mission. They're convincing investors that candidly wouldn't be putting money into the business if it wasn't working. And in terms of scale, to answer your question more directly, Tanya, I mean, Paper grew in the last year from 100 tutors to 1,000 tutors.
Oh, wow.
So there is the demand, naturally, that we're seeing for teachers looking to have a little bit more support in the classroom.
There's also another startup you wanted to mention called Class that aims to improve the online learning experience, even as kids return to in-person school. Here's how the company describes itself.
We support hybrid learning. So we've noticed a lot of schools are going back and they're having some of the kids in class and some are remotely dialing in from home. Well, now it's very easy for those students to feel like they're actively part of the class with a dedicated class cam. We've improved the way students raise their hand in class. And one of the big things we heard from the teachers is that when they were giving lectures, it was hard for them to get feedback from the students to know how they were doing. Well, we made it really simple for students to go ahead and give direct feedback to a teacher or whoever's speaking during the class.
Okay, so class and paper are both kind of working to streamline the role of a teacher who is often juggling a big caseload of students. And man, did we hear so many stories from parents and teachers and students last year during remote learning about how frustrating it was to be on a Zoom and not be able to have that control. How effective are these particular apps at doing what they say they will do?
I think these apps still have to prove themselves. I think they're doing a good job in helping teachers and classes make it work. But naturally, when you make anything hybrid, even work, there's bias involved, right? Do the students who are in class give off body language or get more attention from teachers because they're in person than the kids remotely? How do you even out that experience? I think it's a huge kind of question for tech to answer single-handedly. I'm definitely excited to see them try and approach that, but I don't think it's there yet. There's still a lot of lines, I think, to be drawn around how do we help the kids who aren't in school make sure that they still have privacy and also not other them for being at home for X, Y, and Z reason. I mean, it's really difficult and a lot of it comes down to the diversity and the accessibility of the cost of these platforms.
How much money does something like these apps cost districts? Does the benefit outweigh the costs?
I think it all depends on the outcomes that a school is looking to provide. I mean, if a school is looking to find better ways to support their dyslexic students, for example, it might make sense for them to invest in software services that can provide tutors who know how to work with these populations of students versus adding on an entire faculty. I will say, though, I mean, the digital divide is something that we know schools don't want to lean more into. So sometimes investing in software can create kind of a double digital divide of sorts where now it's not enough for a kid to have a laptop. They need to have a laptop and they need to have access to the software and they need to know how to use it. And it's a lot of pressure, I think, to put on kids down the road.
Have school districts figured this out? We know that during the pandemic, for instance, many districts gave students Google Chromebooks as a way to be able to offset what might be a digital divide. But in this case, you're bringing up another great point.
You know, EdWeek Research Center did a survey where they said that more than 3/4 of teachers said that 75% of their students have adequate internet access at home for consistent, and I think that's super key, participation in remote learning. But, I mean, they also, that same survey said that 5% of K-12 students in the United States aren't adequately connected to learn from home. Even though it's 5%, that's somewhat like 2 million students. So, yeah, to answer your question, Tanya, I definitely think it's something that is not a casual concern or even a footnote on the rise of edtech. I think every edtech founder right now has to find ways to work toward lessening that digital divide.
Natasha Mascarenhas, thank you so much for your time and expertise on this topic.
Thanks so much for having me, Tanya. Always great to be here.